Welcome to Thriving Abroad podcast. I'm Louise Wiles, director and co-founder of Thriving Abroad, where we help couples create lives and careers they love while they're living overseas. We created this podcast to share expat stories to inspire you and expert advice to help you navigate expat life. And today, I'm pleased to welcome to this call Kate Berger. Kate has lived as an expat in the Netherlands for 10 years. She's a child and adolescent psychologist, consultant, and the founder of the Expat Kids Club, which, since its beginning, has provided counsel to hundreds of youngsters and their families, as well as major corporations from the UK, Germany, Singapore, and the United States. In addition to her work as a psychologist, Kate is the co-chair and co-founder of the Families in Global Transition affiliate in the Netherlands, and is a dedicated mindfulness meditation practitioner and certified instructor who teaches mindfulness to young people through the collaborative Mindfulness International. So I'm really pleased to welcome Kate to this call. As a parent, I can honestly say that some of the most challenging aspects of every move I've made have been managing my concern, anxiety sometimes, and sometimes guilt in relation to my children and the change transition. On the one hand, I could always see the positive benefits and feel proud at their handling of the challenge and achievements. But on the other, on their difficult, challenging days, of course, I felt guilty and always questioned whether I was doing the best for them, working in the right way with them. So it's with delight I am welcoming Kate to the call today. Kate, welcome.
Thank you. 30 minutes to
talk today, and we're going to talk about the challenges kids face when relocating, the ways in which we as parents can support them ourselves and perhaps work with professionals to help them through transitions as well. So Kate, how about we start with just a bit of background information about you? Tell us a little about yourself and your life in the Netherlands.
Yeah, great. And thank you so much for having me, Louise. I'm happy to be participating here and talking about this subject matter that I am very much interested in, involved in, and passionate about. So I guess we're starting a little bit about myself. I am an expatriate. I've moved here from New York originally about 10 years ago to the Netherlands, to Amsterdam. And sort of typically didn't really know what I was getting myself into, thought it was going to be a little bit of an adventure abroad, and here I am 10 years later, settled with a business here and a Dutch partner, and no immediate plans to go back to the States, much to my family's they wouldn't be very happy to hear that. Mm-hmm. I spend most of my time working with and supporting expatriate families here, children specifically as a child psychologist, supporting them in the transition that comes with relocation, but also just sort of normal day-to-day life and the challenges that come with being a human, having a human experience, and it's really fulfilling work, especially because expat or third culture kids, cross-cultural kids, depending on what term we might be using nowadays, these kids are really special and unique in that they've been through so many diverse experiences and continue to go through these challenges and develop skills that you can't necessarily teach in a classroom in terms of being able to handle relocation, diversity, being able to communicate with different groups of people, all sorts of, and maybe we'll get into that a little bit later, but all sorts of skills that really make them very unique and special and with the potential to impact our sort of environment and society in really meaningful ways. So it's an absolute honor and a privilege to be able to work with these young people on a regular basis.
Fantastic. And yeah, we'll get into talking about the, especially unique characteristics, actually. Well, there's one question I hadn't asked, but I think we will talk about that because I think that's a really uh-huh. important one as a parent to understand. Mm-hmm. But just before we do, Just from a personal perspective, how did you find integrating into life in the Netherlands? And we're still there 10 years later, so I'm presuming. But you live in Amsterdam?
I'm in Amsterdam, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so integrating into the Netherlands has been interesting. I mean, initially, I wasn't really aware of, like I said, what I was getting myself into. I was right out of college, university, and sort of naive about what I was doing, as we all were at one point, but wasn't really aware of, that I was a part of a bigger community of people who do this sort of thing. So in a way, it felt kind of lonely and isolating to be going through some of the challenges, feeling like you were on your own in that. But also really interesting. I mean, the Netherlands culturally is wonderful. There are also some sort of unique things about living here that present certain challenges. For example, just a little side note, they call it a kind of do-it-yourself society, where if you have any kind of issue, sort of practically or logistically, in terms of something around the apartment or with the car or the bike or whatever, you're kind of expected to take care of it yourself without any help, and you're supposed to figure it out and know how to do it. And coming from this.
That would be
Coming from the States, that was, a little bit different, where, the US being a place where you can certainly for a fee pay somebody to help you do anything. So some of that kind of stuff was a bit of an adjustment. But you develop your strength and your character out of that. So I'm proud to say that I can sort of change a tire on the car if I need to, or the bike if I need to. So
And you bike
I was
everywhere?
along the way myself.
And do
The
you
bike
cycle
everywhere.
everywhere? Yeah.
What's that?
Do you cycle everywhere?
Yep, definitely. Definitely. And even in the rain and the snow and the sleet. Although I just in the last year, after 10 years of being here, got my Dutch driving license. Just for work purposes, it's much more convenient to be able to go those longer distances with a car.
Yeah.
So that's been interesting to learn how to navigate around the bicycle lanes and
Absolutely.
things like that and not hit anybody.
Yeah, I must admit, I've visited and walked and gone in taxis and cycled around Amsterdam, but never driven myself around. And I
Yeah.
hesitate to do so, I think. Bicycles definitely have priority, don't they? And they come from all directions.
Yes.
And I always wonder how, and no one wears bicycle helmets. That's one thing that really
No.
surprises me.
Right. No, I know you see small babies on the bikes and you just think, oh my gosh, hope that's not going to be an issue.
Let me just take you back to one thing that you said in your introduction that you're interest in involved in, and actually just I just felt that perhaps we should explain to everyone who's listening, families in global transition. And I know you run the affiliate for Families in Global Transition in the Netherlands. Just tell me a little bit about Families in Global Transition and its objectives and who it's aimed to support.
Yeah, sure. So I'm the co-chair of the affiliate here in the Netherlands. There's three of us who are actually running it together. However, there is a vast network of people locally who are heavily involved and supporting the organization here as well. So I would, just want to make it clear that it's not just me. It's a huge network of people doing it.
Well, absolutely,
But the
and I
organization.
experienced that because the conference was in Amsterdam in March this year, and yes, absolutely
Yeah,
fantastic.
it was fantastic. I know it was like so wonderful to have that happen here. I didn't even have to go very far, and just the amazing people that came from all over the globe to participate. So it's an organization that was founded originally, Ruth Van Reyken being one of the founding people involved, and basically it was created as a sort of cross-sector platform for discussing issues relating to mobile families. So, you know, bridging gaps between people in sort of human resources sectors to military backgrounds and service providers, psychologists, researchers, you know, you name it, sort of bringing all people together to talk about what are the issues that these people face and you know, what can we do to support them in an effective, meaningful way. And one of the really neat things that sort of happened, I guess, maybe more organically through the network has been this, you know, professionally fulfilling environment that's created, especially when we all sit together in the conference like we did in March. You can really feel the energy and the ideas are flying around and everybody's just getting fired up. But also on the personal level, being able to connect with people who've been through, you know, similar experiences, understand what it's like not only to work with this population, but to also be a part of it.
Absolutely.
So the emphasis on the sort of family word definitely stands out. And it's an organization I'm really happy and honored to be involved with as much as I have been able to be up until this point, because I think the way that sort of, society is going and people are moving around the world and these issues are becoming increasingly important, not just kind of business, you know, corporate level, but also just on a normal day-to-day level that, you know, people in transition and how can we support them so that, you know, we connect and we come together on the planet rather than separate and isolate and polarize and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's a really great organization to just take a look at. You can go to their website, figt.org. I'll put the link actually on the blog post associated with this interview, because there is a lot of information there, a lot of blog posts that you can access to learn about or to support you in your challenges as you relocate internationally. So that kind of brings, we're talking about families. Let's start to talk a bit about new children and the experience of international relocation from their perspective. Now, in the introduction, we talked about TCKs. Probably we should explain that to people in case they haven't heard that term before, because I know if you're new to this, to relocation, you perhaps won't have done. So TCK stands for Third Culture Kid. And how do you define TCKs, Kate?
Yeah, so the term was originally coined from Ruth Van Raken and David Pollack. Their book, Third Culture Kids, is a sort of Bible for this, you know, people working with this population. Nowadays, I mean, the terminology is more flexible and definitely evolves. I think Ruth would be the first person to support and encourage that, as times change and information and what have you. But generally, third culture kids, meaning children who grow up in an environment that is different from either of their parents' native environments, so that meaning that they maybe are growing up in, you know, living in one place, moving to another, transitioning to another, adapting to a local culture, while at home they might have a different culture that they, you know, have to shift back and forth. So there's a lot of inherent transition within just being sort of falling within that category.
Absolutely. And so experiencing that life is kind of a double-edged sword, I think, isn't it? I mean, in your introduction, you talked about the sort of very special and unique qualities that children have develop as a result of this kind of lifestyle. Can you tell us a little bit more about those?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's one of my most favorite things to point out, because I think people, like you said, it's a double-edged sword, and it's easy to focus on the difficulties, the negatives, you know, the pitfalls, the downsides of all this challenge that comes with relocation. But it's really important to hone in on the positives, because kids who go through this sort of type of adversity develop resilience, and they develop the ability to face challenges and overcome difficulty you know, strength and grit and all these sorts of wonderful things. But also, if you really look at the skills, the communication skills that they develop, the sort of global mindset that gets developed, the ability to look at a situation, you know, on the big scheme, the whole picture. And if you think about how that long-term could translate even in a business setting, you're looking at kids who kind of develop these leadership skills, the ability to work with more sort of diverse populations. They can communicate with different groups of people. They can see the big picture. They can, you know, get through difficulty. And so, you know, these are all real, real positive qualities that can come out of difficult experiences that can be used in the workplace, but also just to navigate life. So, you know, they're able to look at any kind of challenge, whether it's, you know, work-related, relationship, family-related, you know, whatever, and to be able to get through it without sort of, you know, letting that sort of stress overwhelm them.
Absolutely, yes. And wow, what a list of benefits there. I think it's always good to start with the benefits, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. And I look at my children, and yeah, I can definitely see some of those have those positives that have come, you know, through from the experience that at times has mm-hmm. has made me question whether we've done the right thing. but yeah, I think there are benefits that definitely outweigh the challenges for many children. So mm-hmm. let's talk a bit about the challenges, though, that you see children facing as they work through the transitions and live this global life.
Yeah. Yeah, so and I think the stress word is where it comes in here, right? Because the lifestyle, the transition, the mobility part of it is stressful. I mean, you got to shift mindset. You've got to, you know, go through that whole saying goodbye to where, you know, where you were, where you've been, maybe sort of sense of self and identity and how you fit into that environment. You've got to say goodbye to all of that. Not to mention the people that you're leaving behind at times, friends, familiar places, you know, leaving all that, saying goodbye to all that is one piece that's stressful. Shifting into, you know, arriving in another place, which is new and unknown, and the uncertainties, and how do I, you know, kids feeling like, how do I fit into this? And by the way, not just kids, but all of us adults too. You know, how do I fit into this? Who am I in this context? You know, where are my friends going to be? What's the school going to be like? All that kind of stuff. And then sort of maybe a little bit later on, you know, bigger questions about, well, where do I really fit in? And you know, who am I really after all this kind of initial transition and moving stuff has settled a little bit? And of course, you know, a lot of the kids that I work with and the reality is that just as they start to get settled, then they go through another move, right? So one of the parents, maybe the job is taking them to another place or for whatever reason. So it's a kind of ongoing cycle for a lot of kids. And so, you know, the stress that comes with that is just, you can't put your head in the sand and not acknowledge that it's a real thing and that it's there.
Absolutely, yeah. And in what ways do you see the stress played out? So as a parent, you know, I guess as a parent, you know, you understand that your child is going through a similar process to yours, although of course their perspective on it is very different to your own, because their worldview is very different from your own, I guess. You know, and that was one thing that I hadn't thought about. Somebody did say to me once, you know, you need to put yourself into the minds of your children and think about it from their perspective. And, you know, while you can rationalize the process and know that probably it will all work out, you know, because you can visualize where you're going to and you have that kind of context. Often children don't, particularly young children. So for them, it is completely the unknown. So how does that stress sort of come out and sort of play out, if you like, in perhaps behaviour? And I suppose you divide it into younger children, older children, because of course it will be different, won't it?
Yeah, I mean there are developmental considerations for sure, and I think you know, another, just to sort of go with what you were just saying also, you know, to take it from their perspective and the importance of doing that. One of the things that's really important to remember is for kids, they haven't chosen this. Like this is, I mean, you know, there are exceptions, but generally speaking, they haven't chosen to have their lives completely picked up and put somewhere else. And so, you know, depending on the circumstances, some families have a lot of time to prepare, some families don't. You know, kids might just feel very removed from the decision-making process, and that can make them maybe very frustrated or angry or mad at their parents. So you might see sort of acting out kind of those sorts of behaviors, you know, fighting or aggression or anger, or withdrawing from the relationship, things like that. But also, you know, the other side of that is if kids start to feel that they haven't been involved, they might be observing their parents going through some difficulty. And without feeling involved and engaged in that, the kids might start to question, you know, just generally question, to have questions about what's going on with my parents or my family, and start to feel maybe a little bit insecure or uncertain or unsettled about what they might be observing in their parents. And so, again, you might see, you know, that impacting their behavior, maybe in other ways. So maybe more of the internalizing, you know, going to their room more or suffering themselves, or you know, just maybe a little bit more kind of presenting this depressed mood or upset, things like that. So I mean, it's definitely on a case by case basis. But I think the point is that, you know, you certainly can observe how the stress can impact kids if you pay attention and look at things like their behavior and overall sort of mood state would be indication that something's going on.
And as a parent, when do we know what and this is a really difficult question, but it's something that occurred to me a number of times as my children were going through our latest move, which was a relocation back to the UK, although for one of my children it wasn't back because she was born in Portugal, and she saw herself very much as Portuguese and didn't, she was angry anyway, that's a whole different story, but I sort of observed their behaviour, and you know, I'd have weeks when I'd worry about them, and then they'd seem fine the next week, and so I wouldn't worry. and I did ask myself a number of times, you know, are we getting to a point where I should seek professional, you know, help, or not? And I, Nim, we didn't. I don't know whether that was the right decision or not. Probably looking back, perhaps it wasn't actually, and perhaps we should have, because I'm sure that could have helped, you know, having an outside person to talk to. But at what point do you think parents should seek support, or should they seek support right from the beginning? Because I suppose it does help to help the children, or give children an outlet and a way, someone to talk to about the experience, where sort of the emotions and the kind of you know, what, not wanting to upset your parents and make them feel guilty, perhaps stops you from saying things to someone else. You can just be honest and say, I absolutely hate it, very about it, and get it off your chest.
Yeah, and I mean, again, it's case by case, but they're all different sorts of ways of having quote unquote professional support. Sometimes for some kids, it's just, you know, reading a book that they can sort of feel validated in their experience. So a big piece about what I do in practice is when kids come in and they're struggling with these sorts of issues, is to give them some information about how, you know, actually this is something that they belong to this community of people. There's other kids that are like them that have been through this or going through like this. They're not alone in what they're, you know, with their struggles. This is a real thing. What you're experiencing, how you're feeling, whether or not you're able to necessarily put your finger on it or articulate it. You know, it's a real thing, and so let's try and see if we can articulate it and put our fingers on it. So that can be kind of having an outlet, talking to somebody one-on-one through sort of more traditional therapy practice, but it can also be, like I said, reading a book or going on a website or watching a movie that, you know, has information about this sort of thing. One of my favorite movies right now is Inside Out, that even though it's a character, she's just moving within the U.S. and in country. A lot of these kind of relocation issues come out. So for a younger kid, maybe watching that movie and then just talking about it with parents, or parents asking questions like, "What did you think about this? You know, just do you think that that's, you know, do you have similar kinds of feelings? What makes you feel joy or sadness?" Or, you know, I'm just thinking off the top of my head, but. So I think the point is the support, you know, making the support accessible in one way or another is always useful.
Yeah.
Whether or not it gets to the point where you feel like you need sort of a psychologist, somebody like me to become involved is on a case-by-case basis. But I think, I mean, you do realize you're asking somebody who's in this field, so I'm going to give a very biased answer, but I think it can't hurt.
No, I think in retrospect, I agree. yeah, and I suppose one thing for children sometimes is it's very difficult for them to describe their emotions, younger children in particular.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm thinking particularly of my younger daughter, who when we moved back to the UK was 8, 9, and we had quite a few months of, you know, she wasn't particularly happy, but went in phases, fits and starts, and then one day she just blurted out how cross she was about it all, and this obviously had been simmering inside, but I think she just didn't know how to express it, and so it was coming out in erratic behavior and but then once she'd said that, I noticed a big change. You know, it was almost like she could finally admit that that was how she felt. Before she perhaps hadn't been able to articulate it. So, yeah, as parents, how can we help children to articulate their feelings?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. And I love the example you just shared. It's really, really neat. Because, you know, it sounds like the point being for your daughter in this example, that being able to share that experience with somebody, being able to, whether it's articulating or just, you know, being able to express it in a way that somebody who cares about her and is paying attention and is tuned into that sees and can empathize with her on that, right? And that's really, you know, from the youngest children to the oldest adults, that's really what we want as humans, to feel like we're understood, that somebody gets it, somebody knows and can connect with me in my emotional experience. So for parents, you know, it always starts with yourself. So if you're trying to understand and connect with your child and what your child's going through emotionally, but you have no idea about your own emotions or where you are, then you're not going to be effective.
Absolutely.
So, you know, taking the time to check in on yourself, and whether that means getting some support professionally or through friends or your partner or whatever, but really acknowledging what's going on with you in your own process in relocation or just in life is the best starting point for being able to support your children.
Yeah, and then giving them the space to talk. I mean, one thing that I remember I did was to say to them, you know, sometimes it's quite tough and I find it difficult. I don't know whether this is the right thing to do, but I would tell them how I was feeling, you know, not, you know, in any scary way, but just to say, you know, some days I feel better than others and I mean, one big thing was missing friends and, you know, our lives that we left behind.
Because
we left not because of lifestyle and friend, you know, we left a fantastic life behind with some fantastic friends. So it was, you know, recognizing that I was finding that difficult in the same way that they were.
Yeah.
And I think that opened the conversation and helped them to realize that it was a normal process.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And because, I mean, understandably, parents really want to protect their kids and put the positive spin on and fix the problems and, you know, support them in the difficulty and all that. But sometimes the best way to support usually the best way to support somebody is to recognize and to validate what they're experiencing, good, bad, or ugly, and to be there for them, for kids to feel like, okay, my mom or my dad or my parent or, you know, my loved one is going to be here with me no matter what I am going through, no matter, you know, how I'm feeling. Mm-hmm. I don't have to be feeling good to be supported. I can also be supported when I'm feeling bad. And you know, my mom recognizes that because she knows what that's like too.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always say to parents, families that I work with, share that with your kids, model that for them, explain to them what it's like when you have a difficult feeling, and again, not in a scary way, like you said, you know, you're not dumping it on them and making them responsible for it, but you're just saying, look, you know, sometimes this happens to me, I have a hard time, is it kind of like that for you, is that kind of what you might be feeling like, you know, what do you think is different about how it is for you, and you know, asking them questions, just being really curious and open, but giving them that sort of model to build off of is very useful and powerful.
Yeah. But I suppose also the kind of counterbalance to that is also looking forward and being positive about what you're trying, what you're building in your new life as well.
Yeah.
You kind of have to have that balance, don't you? Because otherwise.
Definitely. I mean, you don't want
to get depressed and very down about it to your children, and right. Not making progress through that could be quite damaging too. Yeah, which actually brings me on to and sort of another thought around, you know, we talked about stress, and you know, at what point how do you recognize depression in a child? That's which is probably a really tough question, but at what point. And I suppose perhaps that's different for different age groups of children as well. But give me some kind of behavioural markers that might sort of raise the alarm bells.
Yeah. And I guess sort of the between the lines, like the depression to the point that you would want to seek support, professional help.
Yes.
So, I mean, you know, the sort of flags that we'd look for is depressed mood for a long period of time. It's complicated in transition because in a sort of typical normal environment, you might say for, you know, 8 weeks at a max, right? So if the child showed these this depressed mood for that amount of time, you know, seek help. But the reality is a transition could be longer than that. So the child might be going through this for a longer period of time. You know, but just generally depressed mood or withdrawing from sort of things that he or she normally enjoys and likes to do, major changes in sleeping or eating patterns. And again, with relocation, this is always tricky because sleep patterns can be disrupted for something as simple as time changes. And eating habits, again, you know, culturally, what kind of foods are available could impact this. So it's unfortunately not so black and white. But I think if there are questions around, okay, my child is, you know, not doing things that he or she usually likes to, is not engaging, is, you know, either sleeping a lot or not at all anymore, you know, things like that, would be the time to probably make a call.
Yeah.
To a professional. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. And I'm conscious of time. I think we can carry on talking all day. Well, I certainly could. We're just touching the surface. But I wanted to also talk to you about mindfulness because you're involved in mindfulness. Yes. And I know that mindfulness can help greatly with stress. And sort of coping with challenging situations. So can you start by just telling us a little bit about what mindfulness is?
And talking about mindfulness as sort of a life skill that can be applied as a tool to support through difficulty. So whether that's relocation or whatever difficulty in life. But looking at sort of mindfulness as a way of paying attention to the present moment using various mind-body awareness techniques, things like meditation or breathing and movement. That's sort of the general working definition at this point in time.
Yeah. And how, I mean, I suppose thinking about children, particularly younger children, and you know, how they are rarely still for very many minutes how their attention spans not always particularly long. How do you get children to engage in mindfulness?
Yeah, it's a great question. People ask all the time. I mean, younger children are actually naturally really mindful anyway. They are, babies, if you think about babies sort of experiencing and exploring the world for the first time, touching certain foods, hearing sounds, they're really engaged already in the present moment. They're more naturally inclined to be there than us adults who start worrying about the past and regretting and feeling guilty, or, you know, stressing about the future, feeling anxious about what's going to come and all that kind of stuff. So for kids, it's actually easier for them to be mindful. They're already doing it anyway. But so, you know, obviously you're not going to have a young child, sit and meditate for an extended period of time. Definitely not. It wouldn't even be, like, nice to ask them to do that per se. But so we use various techniques, things about just helping them tune into what's going on physically. So it might be, noticing their breath. We do sort of belly breathing exercises or put some stuffed animals on their belly and they watch the animal rise and fall and notice what that's like. Mindful listening where we're, taking some moments, it might even be seconds, to just observe what sounds they might hear. Mm-hmm. Mindful eating, mindful movement, all sorts of things like that. So you do it, you can encourage them to practice coming back to the present moment in a really playful and fun way.
Absolutely. And I suppose you can do that just sitting, eating a meal, for example, or having a drink and just a few minutes. Yeah, just asking them to think about it for a few minutes and doing it with them for fun. Absolutely.
Yeah, and it's a real subtle difference between asking them to think about it and asking them to just experience it.
Okay.
Right? So the minute the thinking mode kicks in, that's not necessarily mindfulness, right? That's thinking. And it's a trap we all fall into in the nature of the mind and all that kind of thing. But
yeah.
So we do it in a course. I teach it's the .B mindfulness curriculum course after school for kids and young kids like 8, 9 years old participate in it sometimes. And we have a mindful eating exercise where they have to just experience different sorts of foods that they might like or not like. And just notice what that's like and what happens in the body and where the mind goes, what thinking comes up, and just observe that.
Right.
And it's fun. They love it. And so some of the home practices about having a mindful bite at dinner, because a mindful meal, I mean, that's tough. A whole meal would be really tough.
Yes, yeah.
You experience your food for 30 minutes.
Thanks.
Yeah.
And so what are the benefits of mindfulness for all of us, I guess, but for children in particular?
Yeah. Yeah, so it's really neat because there's recently, last, I guess, 5, 10 years or so, been more and more research going into exactly this, the benefits of mindfulness meditation for kids. A lot more emphasis on adults, but more and more it's coming for the children as well. And what they're seeing, and I'm going to speak really generally because it's a lot, but generally what they're seeing is that kids who practice in comparison to kids who don't, so they'll do it in a school and take half the group and teach them mindfulness and half the group will just have like a gym class or something. The kids who are practicing show increases in things like concentration, abilities, attention, being able to pay attention for maybe extended periods of time, so more focused attention, which, if you just for a moment think about implications for that in today's society with, concentration and attention and kids being completely shifting in another direction with, so much input nowadays and challenges with paying attention. But so kids who practice mindfulness showing improvements in concentration, attention, but also things like enhanced creativity and in addition, one of the most exciting is the research showing how the benefits of practicing mindfulness on self-compassion, self-empathy, and then from that sort of kindness and compassion for the self, how that projects outward in terms of benefits that they see in interactions kids have with each other that are more compassionate, more understanding. So the empathy for others actually comes out as the sort of side effect of practicing mindfulness as well, which is you know, the other, another thought train you can go on with that is about how that can impact society in a big, meaningful way.
Yeah.
If we're raising children that are more compassionate and interacting with each other in meaningful ways. So it's really cool.
Absolutely. And linking it back to sort of the theme of transition.
Yeah.
So that helps children to sort of reflect more on their experience, I guess. More self-compassion through the process.
Absolutely, yeah, and the kindness and the compassion and the acceptance for what you're going through is tough and it's a real thing, and to validate those emotions, right, and to, you know, be able to take care of yourself and be able to prioritize your own needs through a difficult process. I mean, wow, you know, that's relevant for all of us.
Yes, absolutely.
And for third culture kids, again, you know, because they have these skills to be able to interact with diverse populations, if you sort of plug that mindfulness into it and that compassionate connection and interaction that comes with it, and think about how kids are reaching, you know, lots of people, potentially reaching lots of people with these skills, the you know, ability to interact in compassionate, meaningful ways. I mean, my mind starts going to, okay, how could this impact things like politics and economy and, you know, big picture items that these expat third culture kids are going to be growing up and participating in.
Yeah.
Education, medical world, you know, I mean, it's like, wow, it's really exciting.
Yeah, 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 absolutely. And I know a lot of the skills and the sort of the developmental things that you've mentioned, the positive side of transition for children. I was recently reading a book about global mindset and how adults develop it, and how for international leaders, you know, they need to develop all of these aspects, which culture kids have just by the experience
It's pretty remarkable, yeah.
It is. Well, I feel like we could continue, but we've had more than our half an hour, so I think we'd better draw the conversation to a halt. Thank you so much for your time today, Kate. It's been fascinating talking to you. I know that people want to contact you, so if they do, how do they go about doing that?
Yeah, great. They can just have a look at my website. Is www.expatkidsclub.com, or they can email me directly, expatkidsclub@gmail.com, Skype or call. You know, just get in touch. Just reach out. I'm on Facebook, like all those kinds of social media.
And you have a Facebook page, don't you, as well?
Yeah, the Expat Kids Club, yeah. And I'm posting all sorts of, you know, articles and blog posts and things that I find really interesting that relate to third culture kids and mindfulness and all this stuff. Pretty regularly, so I hope somebody's finding that interesting.
I can second that, because actually I hadn't been looking, but I did look yesterday as I was preparing for you, and I thought, how stupid. I have been looking at these resources. I'll be visiting regularly from now on.
Well, timing's everything, so I'm glad you came across it now.
Okay, well, look, thank you very much for your time, Kate. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you so much, Louise.
Thank you, and I'll put all these links on the blog post too, so if you're listening and you didn't quite catch them all, just go back to Thriving Abroad, to our blogs, and you'll see the interview there with Kate, and you can click on the links there too. So thank you for joining us today. If you'd like to know more about what we do at Thriving Abroad, you can find us at thrivingabroad.com and on the Thriving Abroad Facebook page and on Twitter, where we're at Thriving Abroad. If you're an expat who's interested in making the most of your international experience and sharing wisdom and tips in a safe, private environment, ask to join our closed Thriving Abroad Facebook group. Thanks so much for listening today. Stay tuned for our next conversation about successful life and work abroad.